This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Welcome to the inaugural voyage, the maiden voyage, if you will, of The Think Tank right here on 92.3 KTAR. I am Mike Russell alongside Dr. Mike O'Neill. Definitely a show like no other here in the KTAR lineup, as instead of just opinion, we seek common ground.
Well, my greatest hope is that anyone who listens to this show all the way through will walk away and say, well, I may or may not agree, but I think I learned something from the process. We're going to focus to the extent humanly possible on trying to bring out facts. Facts are not always in evidence in a lot of these arguments that you hear on public issues, but we're going to try to emphasize that. And now I can't promise, and I can almost guarantee we'll never be able to completely avoid political argument, but somehow in the course of that argument, we're going to try to make sure that people walk away with a new fact set.
And these aren't topics that we're just pulling out of a hat, mind you. These are the topics that are the topics of the day, the ones that are on the forefront of everyone's mind here locally and nationally.
Are or should be. I think in this particular case this week, our first topic is going to be the governor's Medicaid proposal. And I think most people's reaction to that would be that the eyes glaze over and you fall asleep. But let me tell you why I think that's important. And this will be one of the themes that I'm going to try to stress throughout these broadcasts, the difference between big dollars and small dollars. Now, in state government, when people start tossing around millions of dollars, it sounds like a lot of money because it's more than most of us make in a week. But we have a state budget of about $8.5 billion. So to get to 1% of the state budget, you need to be in the vicinity of $100 million. Well, this particular proposal is $1.5 billion. That's with a B. In other words, it's about 15% of the entire state budget. By any reckoning, that is big dollars. And therefore, if you're at all concerned about the state and how we spend our money and what we do, that ought to be big enough to get your attention. Let me contrast that, for example, with the other major theme in the governor's State of the State address, which was to increase the amount of funding for CPS enforcement. While that sounded like a lot of money, in the neighborhood of $40 million, in terms of the overall state budget, it was the drop in the bucket. What we're going to talk about today, the state Medicare proposal, is big, big dollars, and therefore it ought to get your attention.
Now, for people like me that hear Medicare or hear Medicaid, we instantly think of free medicine, free health care for old people. I don't think I'm in the minority when I think in those terms. Why is a state worried about that? Why is a state even concerned about it? Isn't that a national program?
Well, it's one of the most commonly confused. That is Medicare, which is okay. the federal program for people over 65. The equivalent for people who are not necessarily over 65 but are needy is Medicaid. And Arizona is the only state in the union that has a waiver on that. Our specific program is called Access. Access is Arizona's version of Medicaid.
Okay, and that's not just for old people. That's for who?
That is for people who are very, very low into the lower reaches of poverty.
And now we've seen the governor in the past pull funding for this. I know some people, eligibility is what she did. She pulled eligibility for certain people. I believe they were childless adults. And now that's being put back on the table.
This was several years ago when the Arizona state budget was in free fall and basically 08, 09, the economy was collapsing. State revenues were collapsing. And the governor did, in fact, among other things, proposed very substantial cuts into much the same area.
So that's where we stand right now. Those cuts are still in place. She's talking about bringing things back to the table.
And there's a wrinkle about that we'll get into when we bring in our guest. But yes, that's essentially the case.
And I want to get to that guest right now. Once again, on the Think Tank, we're not going to bring in just someone off the street. We're going to go directly to the source. We want to welcome to the discussion Thomas Betlach. Thomas Betlach is the state director of Access. This is the man that's in charge of all of it. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you for coming up. What I'd like to do in terms of setting you up is to explain, first of all, to our listening public that you're not a politician, that you're a professional manager, a professional bureaucrat, and largely a budget guy, as I read your resume. And what I'd like to ask you to do right off the bat is to explain to us in authoritative terms, what is the difference between Medicare, Medicaid, and the state's access program?
Sure. And I think you did a nice job in the introduction of covering the differences. But as you mentioned, Medicare is a program for those over 65, and it is funded solely through the federal government. Medicaid is a program that's for low-income individuals, and it is a partnership program that's between the state and the federal government. So in Arizona, we have to put up about a third of the costs to participate in the Medicaid program. The federal government puts up about two-thirds of the costs. In Arizona, we call that Medicaid program ACCESS, the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System. And we currently provide coverage for about 1.2 million Arizonans. Just to give your listeners some perspective in terms of the breadth and the depth of the program, we provide coverage for about 50% of the births and about two-thirds of the nursing facility days. Medicare does not have a long-term care benefit. So for those individuals that are elderly in an institution and low income, we cover their nursing facility costs. And low income in terms of the access program for a single individual is around $11,000. For a family of four, it's around $23,000. Arizona was the last state into the Medicaid program. We came in 1982, as you mentioned, under a waiver that really stressed conservative principles around leveraging the private sector through managed care organizations or health plans. And then we also have, in essence, the same provider network that all of Arizonans
depend upon. We have just a minute or so before the break. There's one other aspect of access that I think is different from Medicaid, and I wonder if you could explain that in a minute or so. That is that the program is capitated instead of being fee-for-service. To the general public, could you explain what that means?
Sure. As I mentioned, we contract with health plans, and we pay them a set dollar amount based upon an individual, and that's known as a per member per month cost. And then the health plans are responsible for managing the care, having a network. That compares to a lot of states that established a fee-for-service program in which they basically had an open network and providers would just submit bills into the state, and there wasn't a lot of care management.
In other words, we're paying doctors and other providers to actually take care of people rather than just doing more stuff, with the idea being that they no longer have an incentive to do more stuff. Is that correct?
Clearly, you're trying to align the incentives, exactly, to get better outcomes.
All right. We're talking to Thomas Betlach, who is the director of Arizona's Medicaid Access Program. We're going to keep you on through the break if we could. When we come back, I want to talk about the governor's proposed expansion of this program. More in a minute. It's the Think Tank. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And we are back, The Think Tank, 92.3 KTAR. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, our very special guest, Thomas Betlach. He's the director of ACCESS, which is Arizona's Medicaid program. Thank you for staying through the break with us, Dr. Mike O'Neill.
The governor has proposed a substantial change in the ACCESS program, and it is before the legislature right now. I'm wondering, could you explain to us exactly what is that proposal and what will it do?
Sure. The governor's proposal restores coverage for a population which during the recession, because of the significant impact of the recession on the state's revenues, as well as the growth in the ACCESS program, because typically when the recession hits, ACCESS caseloads growth, we had to make some very difficult decisions. And one of that decisions that was made was to institute a freeze on a program that was put in place by the voters back in 2000, and we refer to it as Proposition 204, but it was enacted by the voters back in 2000, in which we expanded coverage up to 100% of the federal poverty limit for individuals that do not have dependent children. And so back in July of 2011, there were about 230,000 individuals that depended upon ACCESS for their health care coverage, and we had to institute a freeze. We weren't going to let anybody else come into that program. Fast forward to today, and there's roughly about 80,000 individuals still enrolled with their coverage through that program. And what the governor's proposal is to really honor the will of the voters to restore that coverage back up to the level at which the voters said they wanted to provide coverage. Now, in order to do that in a fiscally responsible manner, we have to go a little bit higher than that. We have to go up to 133% of the federal poverty limit. And that means that in order to do that, the federal government will pay an even higher percentage of the costs. And what that allows us is it provides us with resources to go ahead and pay hospitals and healthcare providers for the services that these members depend upon. And it's really, I think, the most important healthcare policy decision that's been before the legislature in 30 years.
So how many people get covered with this expansion?
Well, it's really a restoration, but there's about 300,000 individuals that would receive coverage under the governor's proposal.
And what will this cost the state of Arizona?
Well, you were talking earlier about the general fund, and the general fund is the income taxes and the sales taxes that people pay to the state. Under the governor's proposal, it's actually hospitals that would pay for the costs associated with doing this. It's around $200 million, and it would be through an assessment on hospitals, and the Hospital Association and other hospitals are supportive of the governor's proposal. So in actuality, it does not cost the general fund anything. The hospital assessment would cover the state's costs for this program.
Now, two numbers we just threw out. First of all, that this is a $1.5 billion program approximately.
Right.
The hospitals are going to pick up $200 million, and you're telling us this doesn't cost the state anything. Where's the other $1.3 billion coming from?
Well, I mentioned earlier that Medicaid is a federal-state partnership, and under the Affordable Care Act, some people call it Obamacare, the federal government has said that they will pay for that $1.5 billion in terms of the cost. It's actually about a $1.7 billion proposal, but $1.5 billion of that cost is coming from the federal government to cover the 300,000 individuals and to help provide that funding to stabilize the healthcare delivery system that we all depend upon.
So if I understand you correctly, the hospitals are, and we're going to talk to Betsy Bayless in a few minutes about the hospital's contribution and their motivations behind this. The hospitals are picking up the cost of about $200 million, and the feds are basically picking up the rest of this and no net cost to the state. Is that fundamentally correct?
That's the proposal, yes.
Okay. Now, what happens, let's suppose that this does not make it to the legislature. What happens under those circumstances?
Well, we've forecast that there'll be about 63,000 individuals that will still be receiving services on January 1st, 2014. Our ability to continue to provide coverage to those individuals expires. And that means, in essence, the population that used to be 230,000 individuals now goes towards zero. So that has a dramatic human impact on those individuals that depend upon access for cancer treatment, treatment within the hospital system for injuries and trauma, and a whole other host of diagnoses that we have in terms of the population and its impact. The other thing is that you're talking about roughly $2 billion that has come out of the hospital system and out of the provider system that really now needs to get replaced by other payers, because people will still get sick. They're still going to go to the hospital, require services. Under federal law known as EMTALA, hospitals still need to provide services, and it really just becomes a cost shift to the other payers in the system, which at that point is largely businesses.
I want to explain how that happens. I understand that people no longer would be covered and costs get shifted somewhere, but who and how ends up picking up the tab for that?
Well, what happens is that when the company that you work for that provides healthcare coverage goes in and has to negotiate what the premium increases are going to be, the hospitals are going to say, I'm still having these costs. This cost now is basically uncompensated costs because Medicaid, which used to cover those costs, is no longer a payer. And if I'm going to still have the same delivery system, the same capabilities to serve the citizens of the state of Arizona, I need businesses to pay for that, and premiums will go up.
So if I understand you, in effect, we're going to pay for this as individuals anyway.
That's a good way to summarize it.
Because the hospitals are obligated by law when somebody comes into the emergency room to provide care, and they're going to have to provide that care, and they're going to have to pay it. And if they don't get compensated, then their rates are going higher for everybody else. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. And the other thing that happens is we've now put the delivery system where people are getting their care from the emergency department, which is the most expensive place to get care. And they're putting off that treatment until it actually is an emergency because they can't afford the treatment otherwise.
Tom, as state director of Access, what sticking points do you see to the governor's proposal on the way through?
Well, to a large extent, there's been a lot of concerns voiced by conservative Republicans around the federal deficit and whether or not the federal government has the resources. You know, the governor's been concerned about the federal government's commitment to this all along. And in fact, in her proposal, she included a circuit breaker by which I mentioned earlier, the federal government's commitment needs to be 90%. If it goes below 80%, the program automatically repeals. And so I think a lot of the concern that's been expressed by opponents revolves around whether or not the federal government can continue to do this, and just the whole notion of should the state go back and restore coverage for this population.
Final question, just wanted to ask you. I lost track a little bit in terms of the numbers. Are we talking 300,000 people? Are we talking 63,000? How many people get taken? How many people no longer get this insurance if this proposal goes down?
If nothing happens and the legislature does not move forward in terms of the governor's proposal, we think that there'll be roughly 63,000 people left in January. But the governor's proposal is broader than that and really provides coverage back to where we were before and about 300,000 lives.
All right, Thomas Betlick, thank you so much for joining us. He's the state director of Access. Best of luck with the proposal. It is the think tank. It's Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill. When we come back, Betsy Bayless, President and Chief Executive Officer of Maricopa Integrated Health System, will be joining us. It's the think tank, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the think tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Mike Russell alongside Dr. Mike O'Neill. Joining us is Betsy Bayless. She's the President and Chief Executive Officer, that's CEO for all the cool kids, of Maricopa Integrated Health Systems. Betsy, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Betsy. I wanted to start, if I could, by, this is Mike O'Neill here, and I wanted to ask you some basic facts about how hospitals operate. And specifically, somebody walks into your emergency room and they don't have the means, they don't have the insurance. It's my understanding they have to be treated, but I wonder if you could explain in some detail what happens to those costs and who ends up paying those.
Well, if someone walks into our emergency room or anybody else's emergency room, by federal law, the healthcare system has to take care of them. And not only do they have to take care of them in the emergency room, but if they need to be admitted in the hospital, they have to take care of that, and they have to keep them until they can be discharged. Now, a lot of times, people need to be are ready to be discharged, but there's nowhere to send them, and so the hospital would just keep them. And so I guess what I'm describing is how the cost can escalate for people that are uncompensated and end up in the emergency room. So, you know, that's a lot of money. Now, in my healthcare system, Maricopa Integrated Healthcare, we have about $125 million a year in uncompensated care. So, wow, that's a lot.
In terms of the we just went through the budget for the governor's proposal. I think the public needs to understand that you're just talking about one hospital within the system. There's a whole lot of other hospitals in the state that are incurring similar costs.
Well, absolutely. And every hospital that has an emergency room is going to have the exact same issues that my hospital has. Now, other healthcare systems generally have a lot more commercial paying patients, and the commercial patients, what the healthcare systems can make off of those contracts, generally can help them balance it out. Now, in my system, we don't have that luxury. We have, on a good day, about 20% uncompensated care. And lately, it's been about 48%. uncompensated care. So you get in trouble real fast. You get into an absolute unsustainable position.
Well, that's an extraordinary change. If you're saying that your uncompensated care went from 20% to almost half, 20% to 48%, that's a huge difference. What drove that change?
Well, the state of Arizona expanded Medicaid in 2001, and Maricopa Integrated Health System had about 65% of our business in Medicaid. In the recent recession, the legislature cut back that expansion that took place in 2001. Well, it cut it back, but in essence, it froze it. So people started falling off the rolls, and no new people were allowed to come in. So our uncompensated care doubled. Everybody else's uncompensated care doubled. Now, I want to correct one thing, though. I said 48%. That is not across the board. A lot of that is in our clinics. But our uncompensated care doubled. And I think as I look at the statistics in other hospitals, that's what happened to them as well, because they had to absorb the individuals that were no longer eligible for Medicaid, and they had to pay for them.
So let me make sure I get this. This was in the middle of the financial crisis. The state government is having budgetary problems. They cut certain people off of the access program, and the direct result of that is you have what you call uncompensated care, which means that you're not getting paid for things that you used to pay for, and somebody has to pay for that. Those costs haven't gone away. They've just been shifted. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct. The hospitals have to pay for them.
And you're listening to The Think Tank with Mike Russell and Dr. Mike O'Neill. We're talking about Governor Brewer's expansion or proposed expansion of Medicaid. And on the phone with us is the president and CEO of Maricopa Integrated Health Systems, Betsy Bayless.
Betsy, you're familiar, of course, with the governor's proposal to expand Medicaid, which, as I understand it, will not only restore those specific cuts that were made a couple of years ago, but also add to them a little bit. Can you explain to us what the consequence of that is? What happens specifically to your hospital and to other hospitals in the state if this proposal is adopted?
Well, the first thing that's going to happen if this proposal is adopted, we're going to get people out of the emergency room and get them into primary care. People need to go to our clinics and take care of their high blood pressure and their diabetes and get dialysis and all these things, rather than pushing it to an emergency situation and showing up in the emergency room. That's the most important thing.
That sounds like it saves money.
Well, in the long run, it will, because it's a heck of a lot cheaper to go to a clinic than it is to the emergency room. And so across the board, our safety net healthcare system is going to improve in the health of our population is going to improve. As far as the hospitals are concerned, now just generally, the hospitals in Arizona, they generate about $28 billion in total economic activity, and they represent about 80,000 jobs across the state. So there is going to be more than $8 billion injected into the Arizona economy over the next 4 years with the expansion of Medicaid. And we'll start out, if this should happen in 2014, we'll start out with about 3,000 new full-time jobs. And over time, that will go to over 15,000 new jobs. So economically, it will be a big boon for the state of Arizona.
And what happens if the proposal goes down in flames and is rejected by the legislature? What happens then?
Well, if it goes down, then people will continue to, as I said, that population that was voted in 2001, that will continue to dwindle, and those people will go from Medicaid to uncompensated care. And frankly, this is just becomes a non-sustainable situation. One of the things I'm truly worried about my system, because my system cannot survive based on the demographics of the people that we see. I mean, we have so many Medicaid now that will further convert to uncompensated care, and that is not sustainable for us.
I have just one other thing I wanted to ask about this specific proposal. Really, the hospitals have volunteered in the course of this debate to do something that in the scheme of things is really quite extraordinary. There's about $154 million in state required cost to enact this proposal. And my understanding is that the hospitals, in effect, have said, tax us through various fees and things in order to get this proposal enacted. In the scheme of things, you don't see people saying, tax us, please, very often. How much in the way of fees are involved, and why did you do this?
Well, first of all, we're not allowed to use the word tax. These are provider assessments, and as the healthcare industry said that we would voluntarily pay the match to the federal government in order to draw down this expanded Medicaid money. Now, bear in mind, the federal government has, in this bill, has said they'll pay 90% of the cost. So you will have 10% of the cost that is offered up by the hospitals, and then they get a 9-to-1 match back,
right.
And then they'll be able to care for these people that come in as uncompensated care.
And Betsy, can we get you to hold on just for a couple minutes to the break? We want to wrap that up and come to some sort of agreement when we come back. You're listening to the Think Tank, Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, we are discussing the governor's proposed expansion of Medicaid, and joining us is Betsy Bayless, the president and CEO of Maricopa Integrated Health System. And it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, doesn't matter where you align politically. By all accounts, since 2005, Betsy Bayless has done one heck of a job at the helm there at Maricopa Integrated. We thank her for sticking around through the break.
Betsy,
thank you for that compliment.
I wanted to shift hats with you just a little bit. You are, after all, a reformed and retired politician, and I want you to put on your political hat. Throughout this entire hour, we've been seeing what, in effect, seems like a deal that nobody could refuse. This is a 10-to-1 gain for the state. The only proportion of the costs that are going to be incurred within Arizona are voluntarily being absorbed through, whether you call them taxes or fees or whatever, by the hospital. There's no net cost to the state general fund, yet this proposal is being held up in the legislature. And I want to ask you to sort of put on your hat as a former politician and tell us why you think there is resistance to this proposal in the legislature.
Well, first of all, let me clarify. I did not support the Affordable Care Act, and when it was going through Congress, I spoke widely about the fact that we could take a more incremental approach to health care reform, and obviously that didn't happen. It just came in one big bill. I recently spoke at a forum, and there were a number of legislators there, most of whom were opposed to Medicaid expansion, and they talked about, well, we're going to say no to the Affordable Care Act, and we're not going to put our children in greater debt. And I understand and I appreciate all that. But what I said to these people in the legislature is, if we need to change the composition of Congress to repeal some of this stuff and put our government in a more sustainable economic position, I'm all for it. But I can't do that at Maricopa Integrated Health System. So I kind of see it as, you know, the closer you get to the issue, it looks differently because you're responsible, you're accountable for it, and you've got people that you're responsible for that are sitting right in front of you, and they've got to have care.
If I understand you correctly, you think it's sort of the individuals who opposed Obamacare, and this is a way of sort of symbolically expressing their disapproval for Obamacare? Is that why what you think the source of resistance in the legislature is?
No, I think it's a general philosophical disdain for the fact that our country is so far in debt, and that is not a sustainable position for our country. I don't disagree with that. I do agree with that. But we need to take definitive steps to correct that, to get into Congress people that are going to turn this thing around. But I can't do that right now. I don't think this is a good option, but it's the only option we have right now in order to put ourselves in a situation where safety net hospitals like mine, and very, very importantly, these little rural hospitals that serve communities who are, on the best of times, they can be on the edge. And right now, they're in a position of many of them, of potentially having to close.
Now, I think where we're coming at, where we see the pitchforks and the torches come out, from a normal guy's perspective here in the state of Arizona, is when Prop 204 was presented to us and we got rid of a lot of people on access, a lot of us were raising our hands and screaming, charge a little bit, charge a little copay. Let's start to close that gap and keep people insured. But it seemed to be a political all or nothing kind of game. Were we looking at that wrong?
Well, of course, I'm a believer that everybody should pay something. And in our uncompensated care system, everybody pays. Now, maybe you're not going to be able to pay very much, but everybody pays. But having said that, I just have to tell you, access is the best Medicaid system in the country. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it is the best in the country. And if we could talk the federal government into implementing the access model throughout the country, we would save billions of dollars.
I think we'll make one point about that. I was around here when access was first implemented, and there was a lot of issues the first couple of years. And I think any change that big is going to have some wrinkles in its implementation phase. But I think we have to distinguish difficulties in implementation from long-term effects.
Yeah, absolutely. I was around when access was implemented, too. And it came in, and it was a kind of a privatized system, really. A company came in and ran it. And I think that Bruce Babbitt figured out that he was governor at the time. I'm sure you remember that there was a better way to deal with it, and they took it back into the government. And, you know, that's not always the best way to handle things, but that's what Governor Babbitt did, and charted it out and made it work. And to this day, you know, Tom Betlach leads that agency now, and they run a tremendous business, and they save the federal government, frankly, a lot of money.
As I recall, one of the biggest problems way back when that was first put in was the people who were eligible but failed to sign up for the program. And those tended to be people who weren't paid for, weren't capitated in the state, ended up picking the bill for a lot of very expensive care.
Of course, a lot has changed since those days. As you know, Arizona didn't have a Medicaid. They had a series of county hospitals all over the place. And I think people are a lot more familiar with access now. The general population knows what access is. Families know that if they're unemployed or they don't have any income, they know that they can go try to get on access. So that's it's a completely different deal now.
Well, thank you very much, Betsy Bailey, Betsy Bayless, director of the Maricopa Hospital.
Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now, so the governor is proposing expansion of Medicaid. We've heard from the head of Access, which Betsy Bayless claims is the model that our nation should run on.
Capitated care is the key to it, yes.
Okay, so now you mentioned that earlier, Doctor. And talk to me about capitated care.
Very simple.
Bring that to my level.
Capitated care means somebody agrees for X dollars per month, they're going to take care of your health care needs. as opposed to the system we have right now, which is called fee-for-service. Every time you go in to see somebody, you pay, your insurance company pays, and the incentives under the current system, as it is true with also Medicaid, or Medicare rather, every time you go see a doctor, somebody pays. You pay a little, your insurance company pays a lot, and your doctor gets paid more. So everybody has an incentive to use more healthcare. Under a capitated system, it's so much a month, they take care of all of your medical needs, and there's no incentive to overtreat.
And so what we're seeing here, I think, both in speaking with Betsy Bayless and Thomas Betlach, from the director of Access, I think what we're seeing here is a hope that our state legislature will step up, will do the right thing for both sides. There are those with the forks, the pitchforks and the torches, and there are those that want to give everything to everyone for free. But somebody needs to step in the middle and say, we've got a good plan.
I think that one of the most interesting comments, which was what Betsy made at the end when she's wearing her political hat, she said that the reason a lot of people are opposed to this is it's sort of this has the flavor of Obamacare, and we hate that so much.
No.
Anything with that label on it, we want to vote it down, including something that's going to give us a 10-to-1 match on dollars, and we're not even paying the one.
Right, but at the same time, we've come back from the other side here. We've come back from Obamacare, which was you have to pass the bill to find out what's in it, and now we're finding out what's in it, and there's a lot of hiccups. Do we have that trust to step up as a state going back to where
I want to make one other political observation as we get near to a close here. One of the fascinating things here is that we have a Republican conservative governor who's made this proposal. She probably has in the bag all of the Democratic votes.
Sure.
And a handful of Republican votes. And the real issue, and probably enough to pass this if it comes up to a vote, but there are two people, the House Speaker and the State Senate President, who get to decide whether or not this even comes up for a vote. Traditionally, they have an ironclad rule that they don't bring something up for a vote unless a majority of the Republicans support it, which is probably not going to be the case. So if they bring this thing up for a vote, it probably passes. If they decide not to bring it up for a vote, that could be the end of it. Now, that begets the question of what do they do? My personal guess, they'll do it, but they'll extract something. This is real power, and they're going to extract something in exchange for that.
And the government has proposed an expansion of Arizona Medicaid. You heard it right here on the Think Tank. We want to thank Betsy Bayless, the president and CEO of Maricopa Integrated Health Systems. We also want to thank the director of Arizona Access, Thomas Betlach, for joining us. I'm Mike Russell. He's Dr. Mike O'Neill. Thanks for being with us. It's the Think Tank, 92.3 KTAR.